Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes can be found at www.robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SEL is proud to be sponsored by Mosey Pro and GoToMeeting. Now, on with the show. Hi everybody, welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. It's the 8th of February 2012, I'm here in Gosport in Hampshire on the south coast of the UK. And first off, just a little apology about the sound quality. I know I made a commitment this year to make sure I put the bumpers in and have the music and all this sort of stuff, but I'm struggling with my sound. And you're probably struggling to listen to it sometimes as well. There's a funny kind of distortion going on, isn't it? I know there's some noise in the background, which I'll try and get rid of. I'll have a go at doing it for this podcast, but I don't know. But it's almost like I've got a problem with compression or something. And my voice sort of goes in and out in a very strange way. So my apologies, I am working on it. I think it's because I'm working with a really cheap microphone at the moment. Really, really cheap. So I'm saving up to get a nice Plantronics one or something like that. A nice USB instead of one that plugs into the jacks on my laptop. So bear with me and thanks for staying with us. Now, before we get into our main subject today, which will be questions that I've received over the last week or so, I just want to do a quick ad, as ever. GoToMeeting, proud sponsor of SCL, Subject Composition of Light Photography Podcast. We know that being able to attach a face to a name is very important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. But unfortunately, meeting all of your clients and colleagues in person can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces, because it lets you meet face to face from anywhere in the world. So how does it work? Well, with GoToMeeting by Citrix, all it takes is a webcam and a click to collaborate in a group HD video. You can see attendees eye to eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is easy to set up and simple to use. So, for example, before we started using GoToMeeting with HD Faces as a sponsor for SEL and a lot of the other podcasts on the Tech Podcast Network, we got to have a play with it in the demo mode. It really is very, very good, even in my crappy old PC with a simple webcam and a slow broadband connection. It was it's a bit difficult to say, but normally when you've been in conference calls before and you're simply on the phone and you're playing with your phone or reading the newspaper, it's difficult to describe how much more engaging it is when you're actually looking at somebody's face and looking at their desktop on a computer. So you can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. And everybody can try it free for 30 days. So don't wait. Try this special offer now. Visit GoToMeeting.com and click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. So go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. And make sure you use that promo code PODCAST. You'll get your free trial for 30 days. I'm sure you'll love it. And thanks to GoToMeeting for sponsoring SCL. So, this is a midweek podcast. What day is it today? It's Wednesday, isn't it? Oh, I've got to drive to Hounslow tomorrow. I've got a manager's meeting up by the airport up there. So I'm probably going to... I'm debating whether to take my big camera, put the big lens on and take some pictures of the jets coming into land. But I might just take my Olympus trip and use a roll of film on it, because I'm burning through a roll of Kodak. I'm probably going to get this... It's the Kodak black and white that you can get processing in colour C41 chemicals. I think it's BW400 it's called. I could be wrong, but it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like and how it compares with the Ilford film that does the same thing. Obviously, sad news recently with Kodak going into, is it Chapter 11 bankruptcy, where they're protected from their creditors for a year to get sorted out. It'd be really a shame to lose such a company that's been integral in bringing photography to the masses. I just hope we don't see something like this happen to Polaroid, where it's not really Polaroid anymore, is it? It's a different company. We just see the name, and you see the name Polaroid and all sorts of weird things. But anyway, back to questions. So one of the questions I received fairly regularly, and somebody emailed me the other day as well, was about mirror lockup. You know, what is it and why bother? A mirror lockup is something that you get on SLRs, single lens reflex cameras, you know, bigger ones that you change the lenses on. And it tries to get rid of the problem of something called mirror slap or camera shake. And what happens is, When you're looking through a viewfinder on an SLR, the light's coming through the lens, it's hitting like a mirror, and then going up into the top of the camera, and there's a prism there, and then it shines on your eye so you can see what's going on. And the problem is, when you press the shutter button to take a picture, that mirror flicks up out of the way, so the light then hits the sensor, or the film if using film camera. But that movement, that mirror moving, you know, because every action has an equal and opposite reaction, doesn't it? As the mirror goes up, that means the camera has to come down slightly, and then you get a tiny little bit of camera movement. And that leads to camera shake, which means that your picture could be a little less sharp than it otherwise would be. And so mirror lockup is a function whereby the camera, before you actually take the picture, pops the mirror up out the way before the shutter opens or the shutter moves. And it's useful in different situations. It tends to be where you're using a kind of an exposure that isn't really, really long and isn't really, really short. So if you're shooting at like, anything above 25th of a second, you know, which you can just about, corpus angle, which you can just about handhold if you're really good. And then any faster than that, mirror lockup probably isn't gonna help you. Similarly, if you're doing exposures of, say, over 30 seconds of static objects, then mirror lockup probably isn't gonna help you either, because in the first case, the shutter speed's too fast anyway for it to notice the camera moving. And in the second case, with really long exposures of static things that aren't moving though, a little bit of movement at the beginning of exposure doesn't matter. Because in the long term, that you're physically not going to see that movement. And it's really sort of in that middle ground where mirror lockup comes in handy. And even when the camera's on a tripod as well. And you'd have to look in your instructions to see how your camera does it. On lots of old film cameras, it's a physical button you press or a wheel you turn, and the mirror clunks up out of the way, and then you take your picture. And then you have to clunk it back again. But with most DSLRs these days, it's a function you set, and when you press the button to take the picture, the mirror flicks up out the way, and then you press your shutter button, and then it takes the photograph and things like that. If you're doing long exposures of things like star trails, or imagine you're on a motorway bridge at night, and there's cars going underneath, and you're taking pictures of the light trails, that's another good chance to use mirror lockup, because what happens is that tiny little shake of the camera at the beginning of the exposure, when the mirror moves, you'll see that in your light trail. There's a little wiggle in the light trail right at the beginning. And so that's another good idea. I mean, my general rule of thumb is, if you're in a situation where you've got the camera on a tripod and you want a really sharp picture, but you don't want the camera to move at all, or you want to take advantage of moving things like light trails, just turn mirror lockup on, because you're probably going to be using a remote or shutter delay at the same time. And so it's like an extra bit of help to keep your pictures really sharp. Now, if you're not using a DSLR, you don't have to worry about it, because there's no mirror to get in the way. But there are still things you can do to make your photo sharper. Obviously, use a tripod. But you, instead of using mirror lockup, you can still use either a remote, or all cameras have a shutter delay, you know, like a 2-second delay or a 10-second delay, or maybe you can add a custom functions. And by just isolating the time for when you press the shutter button, for like 2 seconds or 10 seconds where the camera actually takes the picture, that will get rid of any inherent movement that you've put into that camera by pressing it. When I used to shoot with my Fujifilm S5700, it had a great shutter delay of 2 seconds, which you could turn on. So even if I was hand-holding, if the light wasn't very good and I was down at the lower shutter speeds, you know, say a 30th, round about that, sort of, to a 10th of a second, but I didn't have my tripod with me, I'd put on that 2 second shutter delay, and sort of that would give me a chance to get sharper shots. Unfortunately, with my 350D Rebel XT, the minimum shutter delay is 10 seconds, and that's a bit too long to, when I'm hand-holding. I can't be bothered to press the button and wait that long. And the only ever time I use that is if the camera's on a tripod and I've forgotten my remote or the battery's gone. So there we go, mirror lockup. I hope I've explained that and you'll be more encouraged to give it a go in the future. Another interesting question I got, excuse me while I just have a cup of coffee. Another interesting question I got was about lens adapters. And I got a really specific question about using lens adapters with flanges and autofocus electronics in them. But basically, you're not stuck with your manufacturer's lenses for your particular camera, who's interchangeable lenses. So just because you've got a Nikon SLR or a DSLR or a Canon DSLR or an Olympus one, doesn't mean you've got to use Olympus fit lenses, even if they're made by other people. By getting a lens adapter, which is basically like a piece of metal that screws into the body of your camera or fixes onto the body of your camera, you can then use a different adapter. So, for example, I use my Canon 350D digital SLR with old M42 screw mount lenses. And they open up a whole new world of opportunity for using cheap lenses, especially when you're getting into it. If, like me, you do car boots and visit charity shops, you can find these lenses is cheap. And what I would say is I would only ever bother with things like these adapters if you've already got the lenses or you can get them very, very cheap. It's no point spending lots of money, I think, on old M42 lenses or lenses for other systems, because you might as well put the money that you spent towards lenses that fit your camera, because you do lose certain things. You lose the ability to autofocus, you lose any electronic control from the camera. Modern cameras, it's quite difficult to focus manually anyway. I mean, you can do it with a bit of practice. And so if you can pick up M42 lenses, for example, really cheap, you know, by going to car boot sales and stuff, and you know, by cheap I'm talking less than like £10 or $20, then I would say get an adapter, like an EF to M42 adapter, and then have fun with the lenses. But if you're having to spend, you know, £40, £50, £60, $100 on a lens, M42, don't bother, unless it's a really amazing one, because you might as well get a modern lens with modern bits on it, you know, with autofocus and things like that. Also, one of the things you've got to look out for, depending on the make of your camera, the lenses can be different. So Canon users are quite lucky in the fact that with an M42 lens adapter, you can use a lens and you can pretty much get proper focus with it, because the bodies are quite thin. But what you find is, I think on Nikons, the lens adapters tend to have a piece of glass in them. Otherwise, the lens you're fixing on won't focus to infinity, and that means you lose certain bits of optical quality. One of the things I keep meaning to do is get a lens adapter for my Canon for my old Minolta glass as well, because I've got a 51.4. But the problem is, again, it would have to have a little bit of glass in the adapter, and so I'd lose some of that quality for the lens. So I'm a little bit reluctant to do that. So my advice to everybody would be, if you've got access to cheap M42 lenses, or you've got a supply of lenses already, by all means get an adapter and have a play around with using them. But they're not as fast and as easy to use as the modern lenses that way, so don't go spending lots of money on it when you could put that money towards modern lenses as well. Excuse me. Now, our second sponsor is Mosey for Business with Mosey Pro. And we all know that when it comes to running a successful business, there are many things you have to get right, like hiring good people. But one thing that is often overlooked, and that's protecting the data that powers your business. Computers, servers, external hard drives, and even tape backups are vulnerable to failure and data loss. In the US alone, over 140,000 hard drives fail every single week. According to one study, only 7% of companies that lose their data centers for 10 days or more survive beyond a year. I want to tell you about our friends at Mozy, the most trusted name in online backup. They back up more data than the entire written works of mankind from the beginning of recorded history in all languages. How cool is that? Companies like General Electric, Starwood Hotels, and Accenture use Mozy Pro to back up their data. Mozy Pro also backs up educational institutions like Stanford University and the Yale School of Management. A good example would be someone like Lauren, a small business owner who left her IT job to start a dog boarding and daycare facility, and she used an external hard drive for her backups. But she lost data because she had forgotten to back up a few times. Then she switched to Mozy Pro and says, "I chose Mozy Pro for its simplicity, automatic schedule, and wonderful customer services." So, if you're not backing up your business data with Mozy Pro, here's a reason you should consider Mozy Pro to back up your business data. During the backup process, all files are safeguarded with military-grade encryption and stored at Mozy's world-class data centers. If your business is not backed up with Mozy Pro, you really need to make sure your data is backed up. So why not give our friends at Mozy a call? They've been doing this a long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now, you can save 15% by using the promo code PODCAST15. In the States, call 877-669-9776. That's 877-669-9776. Or visit mozypro.com. That's mozypro.com. Thanks to Mozy Pro for sponsoring SCL, the SCL Photography Podcast. Phew, I tell you what, I've had a hard day at work today. My throat is really dry and I've got a bit of a cold as well, so my apologies for my sniffling and drinking. Now, sort of going on from what I was mentioning about lens adapters, I've also been asked about buying older lenses for cameras. So our camera systems have been, even our digital ones, have been around for quite a while now, haven't they, if you're using DSLRs. And, you know, if you buy, for example, just a DSLR body, you know, you can see on eBay and other places all these cheaper, older lenses going. And it's, you know, is it worth getting them? And I have to start off by saying I don't know anything really about Olympus and Pentax lenses. But, for example, if you've got a Sony DSLR, you can buy the older Minolta autofocus lenses, because they will fit and they will work, because Sony bought Minolta and used the Minolta mount. The old Minolta non-autofocus, the old Rockor MD and MC... Is it MD? MC... lenses that have got the manual focus on them won't fit the new fittings. But yeah, you can pick up the Minolta ones. With Nikon, you can buy, I think with their SLR system, almost every single lens they ever made from about 1950 still fits, because they haven't changed their lens mount. But obviously you lose different functions. So for example, most of Nikon's entry-level digital bodies don't have an autofocus motor in the body. And so you'll use autofocus on some lenses. So check the web to see what the compatibility is. One of the things to think about as well when looking at older lenses, although they may seem cheaper, the focal length might not always be suitable for your new DSLR, because most entry-level and mid-range DSLRs have what we call a crop sensor. So that means the sensor is a little bit smaller than a bit of 35mm film, or quite a bit smaller. So that means that the apparent focal length is a little bit longer. They're not quite as wide, in other words. So what does that mean? It means you can't fit as much in. So if you were to look at an old, say, typical Canon lens, like a 35 to 105, you think, oh, well, that's really cool, that, because I've got a nice bit of zoom at 105, and I've got a 35. But that 35 isn't very wide at all. When you're using a 35 on a crop sensor camera like the 350D, if you times it roughly by 1.5, that would give you, 15-17, so that's about 52mm, which isn't wide at all. And you find when you come to doing things like landscape shops or architecture, you have to back off a long way and you can't get wide. Because the typical kit lens that you'll buy with a new DSLR will start off at 18mm. Now that's not 18mm in old money in 35mm speak. You can't put one of those lenses on a camera film camera because they won't fit. but you need it on the crop sensor to get that wide body. So just bear that in mind. The fact that if you're buying an old Minolta autofocus zoom that's like a 28-80 on a new Sony DSLR, that won't be very, very wide. So sometimes it's worth using them like as a backup or as a really cheap alternative. Don't spend lots of money on them at all. With old Canon lenses as well, which I know about, you also have people like Sigma making them. And the problem with the old Sigma lenses that were made for the Canon film cameras is they don't work with the new Canon digital cameras. So watch out for that as well. Don't be tempted to lose a few quid on an old Sigma lens that doesn't work on your new Canon digital one. And also, just bear in mind as well, is the fact that when camera lenses have been around for a long time, they've probably got some dust on them. Scratches don't really worry about if they're on the front elements. But they don't have the advantage, especially with modern lenses, with image stabilization. I mean, you're lucky if you're a Sony user, and I think Olympus and Pentax, because they have image stabilization, in the body of the camera. But with the, you know, within modern 18-55s, 55-250s from Canon and Nikon, that image stabilization is really very good and it's worth a couple of stops, and it can help you with your photography a lot. And also they have things like better coatings, they're lighter and weights. So I guess what I'm saying is, similarly when I was talking about the adapters a little bit earlier with M42 lenses and the like, it's great to use these older lenses. But bear in mind the fact that the focal length won't be as wide. That doesn't matter if you're into sort of wildlife because they're a lot closer. You're losing things like IS. So don't spend loads of money on them. If you can pick them up cheap, good. And you can use them to supplement your kit. But remember, you can buy a kit lens, like say for Nikon and Canon, like an 18-55 image stabilized kit lens, for not that much money if you check eBay, you know, from people who have bought a camera and are now upgrading to a better class of lens, for not that much more than you see some of these older lens going for as well. So just bear that in mind, you know, especially with longer focal lengths as well. Things like the Canon 75-300 goes for normally about £100 and more on eBay. But if you look carefully, you can normally pick up the 55-250, the particular lens that I've got that I think is great, that's an IS lens, for normally about £150. And go on Amazon, and that's the other thing I'd say as well, is before you splash out any money on second-hand lenses, go on Amazon and see what lenses they've got on offer, because you may really be amazed. You know, you could be spending this money on a lens, and you can, you know, pick yourself a nice nifty 50 1.8 new for, you know, round about, well, less than £100 anyway. So there we go. Remember, if you've got any questions, just send them to me at scalespeeder@gmail.com. More than happy to have a go at answering anything, and they give me some nice ideas for the podcast as well. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music, but most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from RobNowPhoto.com, and hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.